Right.
Just a piece of clarity. Excuse me. Can someone just tell us who Lev Davidovich is, please?
Trotsky.
Trotsky, okay.
I believe.
Yeah.
I haven't spelled his name wrong.
Bronstein. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, just the use of the word value.
Yeah, I
would. That a little bit. I wasn't quite sure. It sounded at one point like you were talking about kind of products or commodities, and then another point.
I was using properties and values interchangeably. If I used a third word in there, I probably misspoke. But really, I was deliberately trying to do it from, well, not necessarily first principles, but I was trying to do it without saying, oh, well, I've looked at this book on dialectics here, and I've looked at this thing on formal philosophy there, mainly because I wouldn't understand it anyway. But because if you try and use... A part of the notion of this is that if you try and use old language, you will get old ideas. So I just basically try to, you know, to keep putting one foot in front of the other and hope not to stumble too much.
Can I just come back and say...
Of course you can.
So what exactly are value? Because that's the thing that I got a bit confused, because at first, it sounded like you were talking about commodities, and then it sounded like you were just talking about kind of things, like objects in the world which would include sort of everything.
Right, okay, if I... this is what I'm here for. The notion is that we have an evolutionary relationship with... the mind has an evolutionary relation with the world, in the same way that creatures have an evolutionary relationship with the world around them. They don't have like a dialectical Lamarckian relationship. Well, some might say they have, but let's just say they haven't. And I'm saying it's the same thing for ideas. Basically, sort of like, you know, we get hit in the face and say, what was that? And then behind that, we're forming lots of ideas about how that works. Now, you can use words like ideas, properties, values, etc. And I'm trying to be a little bit consistent, but not really doing it very well, obviously. But what I'm saying is that basically... We are the worlds formed by trying to move around in the environment beyond the senses, yeah? And that is sort of like, you know, within an individual. If you took, I mean, I'm not saying that this would ever be possible. If you just took it theoretically, within an individual, that would be more of a sort of a dialectical this to that to the other relationship of. So it's like, well, I did this, so I better have them do that again. But you know, you haven't like put names on everything that's going on, and they're named every plant in the world or whatever. But if you took a whole society of people together, and they are sharing their experiences, and they're sharing their communication, then instead of saying, I just stung myself, I better not do that again, you say, that's a nettle. Yeah. So you then sort of like, you know, you've come up with a property, if you sort of mean. But what I'm saying is that we share these, yeah, as you know, this is our language, yeah? And as we develop a technological society, we are nothing but language. Now, everything around here is a property that you can name. You don't just have to say I'm sitting on something. You can say it's a chair. You don't have to worry about what colour it is. It's a blue chair, you know. Whereas if you look back. Even if you look back a couple of thousand years, a Greek would probably tell you it was a green chair. Apparently their senses of colour were quite different. You know, so... is that helping at all?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. It's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So just while you're on clarification, I think there's two words. I think two words that would help clarify a bit more.
Go on.
First one is dialectic.
Yeah.
And the second is reify, because they're particular specialist words that I think you do need to...
Okay, right, okay. The problem is that dialectic is a specialist word, and I'm trying to not use it in a specialist manner. I'm trying to say that dialectics is just a way that... It's just talking about things relating to each other. Yeah, so if you... think of it this way. If you had a car crash... Yeah, and you've got a crash of anything. If you've got a bag of dye, sort of like bashing against the wall, it's like dye dissolved in fluid. Okay, so it's dye dissolved in water. Say, but it's anyway. If you dash it against the wall, it will form a pattern. okay? That's it again, form another pattern, probably in like, you know, discrete ways. Yeah. So if you did it with a different, you know, a different bag from the same starting point, it would do the same thing. Okay. So like you, so you've got a relation, you've got a relationship between like the bashing and the patterns that are coming out. Okay. So so you have. Sorry, give me a moment. That's not a good example. I really want a spare brain for this. Dialectics is just a relationship of one property to another. That's way. So when I'm saying, for example, this is a way of looking at it. If I say that a worker has a dialectical relationship with the factory they work in, okay? That means that you've got a set of notions about what a worker is, what they feel like, about the 9 to 5, about they're married and whatever, and you've got a set of notions about what a factory is. You know, it's a place where you get a fair day's pay for a fair day's work and all that kind of thing. Yeah. Now, if you first of all, a factory, it starts off as a set of notions about it. This is a good example of reification, I suppose, is that reification, a re is Latin for thing. It just means turning something into a thing. Okay, so if you walk into a factory, you're going to get a whole lot of mainly negative notions about what a factory is, but those are going to harden by your being there for a while, by your talking to colleagues, etc., until the point that a factory is just a thing. You'll notice this if you go to a new job. A new job is rather confusing. You've got all sorts of, you don't know who you're talking to, who your line manager is, and all this kind of thing. Yeah, but as you're there for a while, you settle down, and the factory, the workplace just becomes something that you do. You don't question it anymore. You don't say where's the canteen. You don't say who I answer to. You don't say what my KPIs are for cataloging or whatever it is. Yeah, sure about that. so that would be reification. Dialectics, you put me on the spot now. I'm just trying to think of a way to explain it. Dialectics is just a relationship between one thing and another. The dialectical relationship between water and steam, for example. You've got water, you boil it, it's water, it's a bit warmer, bit warmer, bit warmer, bit warmer. And then, at some point, you just say, oh, that was water, and now it's steam. Yeah? And it's turned into something very different. Okay. Now, what I'm saying is that it's not that the world does fancy things, it's just that we use one notion for water, another notion for steam, and as we go through our world, all of a sudden we find that we're using the wrong one, if you sort of mean. So it's our minds that move from using one notion to another. Now, dialecticians would say it very differently because they believe in dialectics. I'm trying not to believe in dialectics. Yeah, I'm just trying to say that it's the way that the mind organises information. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me if I've sort of misinterpreted, but if we're, most of the time we're walking around and we're carrying around in our head our impressions of the world and our interpretations, rather than being sort of like objective copies, if you like, of the outside world. You know, when we walk around, we're taking our own particular interpretations, where our own connotations are fed by our own experiences and our own circumstances. And if, as you say, that then sort of conditions us to look at the external world in a certain way, or interact with the external world in a certain way. So we're walking around, we're sort of conditioned through either genetics or society or upbringing or a combination of all that to look at things in a certain way. How can we then make that jump to looking at things like the internet in a different way? If we're sort of conditioned to view things in a certain way, how do we then make that jump to view sort of the internet, as your example, in a way which isn't conditioned by our experiences, our capitalist language, or capitalist ways of dealing with things? Or if we do then think about the internet in a different way, or anything else in a different way, you know, mobile phone technology or anything like that, how do we know that it is different, or it's not just the same product of our conditioning, our makeup, our our sort of everyday sort of awareness of things? Could it not be that if we think we're looking at or thinking about something like the, or interacting with the internet in a different way, how do we know it's really a different way, or it's just another type of conditioning or another aspect of our conditioning? Does that make sense?
Well, first of all, it seems like there's a lot of notion still of there being sort of like what we think about the world and what the world actually is. Yeah? What I'm actually trying to say, and this is the most confusing thing of it, even within a rather confusing set of notions, is I'm saying that we are never talking about the world beyond the senses. We are only talking, we're sort of like sharing around the things that we think about the world. Yeah? But when we say the world, what we mean is the contents of this and the contents of other people's heads, what people have shared with us. Yeah? Now, what we draw from what is presumably the world beyond the senses is when it smacks us in the face. Yeah? But the relationship to that is entirely one way, in that sort of like we form those notions and then we share them. Okay. Now, when it comes to the internet, what you're saying, I think you're trying to say something like, how do you recognise the new and how do you exploit new? What I'm saying is that as we share our thoughts about the world, without necessarily being conscious of it, and usually not being conscious about it, we treat the world as a thing just as it is. Okay, so a chair is just a chair, sort of like a fan is just a fan, and a factory is just a factory. Okay, but if you look at these things as only that way because we make them that way, yeah. Now, that is not something that's easy to do when you've got an existing factory, because you can stand in front of an existing factory and say, I disbelieve you, and it's still going to be the factory they have to work in next morning. Okay? But if you take a new invention that has not settled down into, it's not been divided up into a set of notions that we all share, it's not been digested by capitalism into the notion that, oh yes, sort of like we should pay for newspapers on the internet, even though it costs nothing to share them, yeah? Because they've been through that process of capitalism browbeating us into saying that, yes, you buy something regardless of whether it's free or not, because I own it, yeah? If you catch that new technology at the start, yeah, you can instead of it following the route into capitalism of recuperation of becoming a part of the capitalist set of objects, yeah, that, yeah, you just treat the same. You buy an online newspaper the same way you would buy a physical newspaper, for example, with the internet. If you can interrupt that and say, "And capitalism is wrong, and we intend to." We intend to do this differently, and the main way of doing this differently is to actually not just to say we have a different way of forming these notions, but to say, well, we want to sort of revolutionise production itself. Yeah? So you're not just saying, I want the internet to work like this instead of like that. Yeah? You're not saying that there is a socialist way of running the internet and a capitalist way of running the internet. What you're saying is, you're saying we never want the internet to settle down to something. Yeah, we want all these innovations to keep going. Yeah, we want them to keep innovating, that, yeah, to revolutionise continuously production, and that continuous revolutionising of production is the thing that destroys capitalism, because capitalism needs them to fall back. Do you see what I mean? Capitalism needs them to fall into its existing set of objects, and you never let them settle into being objects. Do you see what I mean? At least not the kind of objects that we pay for. If you see. Yeah, so you are trying to take the new that we create, because we're the workers, we create these new products, you know, and you want to take that, and instead of capitalism saying, yes, you're going to pay for it the same way as you pay for anything else, we interrupt that and we say, no, this is a new thing that we've done, yeah, and we're going to do it in a different way. Now, the capitalists to the feudalists, they had to find a different place. In a physical place, in order to create their new world and then to come back. They went to the New World, they went to the Far East, they went trading, etc., etc. Okay? And one of the fanciful notions about socialism and anarchism has often been that we will find a place for ourselves, yeah, that we will find an anarase from Ursula Le Guin, anarase?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Or some other place that we will be able to do that. Or possibly even that the internet somehow is going to be a meta place where we will be able to meet up and create our great society. Now, what I would say is that it is that process of not letting the process settle down at all, of keeping moving, of keeping things, rather than finding somewhere new, to just keep things up in the air. That should be our revolutionary approach, rather than to find somewhere new to settle all this down. But if we go and settle in a new place, the capitalists will just come and take it off us with guns or whatever they do. You know, we can't beat them in the old approach, but we can beat them just by not letting it become something that the capitalists can assimilate in the first place.
Right, at the front. Yeah,
I'm just wondering, forgive me, comrade Gillis, I admire your articulation and the way you described everything, but is it not an otherwise complicated way of just describing a way of reinventing class consciousness and a set of values? In other words, for most of us in this room have already overcome the revolution in our minds in order to see what we believe is the eventual route to socialism. There's a lot of description, there's a terrific speech as it was, a presentation. I think perhaps maybe you have complicated things more than might otherwise be. In other words, you're almost reinventing the wheel or giving an alternative description to class consciousness.
I do understand that, yeah. And I see where you're coming from. My answer would be that if we were here by the million, then I would agree that I was just reinventing class consciousness. Mm. I don't think that we, or in fact other leftist organisations, or even rightist organisations, or any others, I don't think that at this particular point in history, we are actually forming along those like classic class consciousness lines at all. I mean, if you looked at the reasons that we have come to this room, yeah, you would probably not find that it's just because we're 9-to-5 workers, yeah, and that all of a sudden has created a Marxist consciousness in it. I think you would find that every single one of us has actually got particular reasons that we're here. That we are not Jesuses, we're John the Baptists, if you see what I mean. Mm. You know, that we are the kind of party that will see a revolutionary party form, yeah? But we didn't necessarily form as a revolutionary party. We formed as a bunch of misfits, you know. And if you look around us, yeah, I don't think you will find the sort of like, you know, the proletarian elite here. Yeah, what you will actually find is you have fine people who have got particular problems with capitalism. Now we can do something about that. Yeah, the fact that we have come together. Yeah, we have got the same problems with capitalism, and we can deal with capitalism regardless of the fact that we may not have come in a classic industrial route. But we do have to accept amongst ourselves that, you know, we are not here because, you know, we're all horny-handed sons of toil, or we've just come in wearing our overalls and carrying a spanner. You know, that model has just not worked for us, and it hasn't worked for leftist parties either, really. Yeah, so I would actually say that you are right. I am trying to reinvent class consciousness in a way. However, I am trying to come at it from a different angle because I think there's something fruitful to be done. And the reason I think that is because our existing notions of class consciousness are consistently coming up with the wrong results. Yeah, we say a thing about ourselves, yeah, but that thing is wrong about ourselves. And we say the same thing about our class in general, and we are obviously wrong about our class in general, because our class is not becoming more revolutionary. It's if anything, if you look at it, it's becoming less revolutionary, you know, or certainly less prone to pursue what we would consider revolutionary alleyways. You have more of a process of compromise. And one thing that I didn't get to with my model is sort of I should have actually pointed up, but my muse failed me, if you will, is the notion of falling through. Yeah. Now, this is tied to my notion of what's happening with the internet, of trying to revolutionise it instead of fighting over existing goods with the capitalists. What I would propose is that there are two ways of capitalism breaking down. Number one is us basically fighting a pitch battle with them and winning over capitalism's existing products. That's our conventional notion, yeah? That we basically take the field against the capitalists, there's more of us and we win, okay? That should have happened in the last couple hundred years if it was going to happen, yeah? And we always think, well, let's wait a while, yeah? The problem must be that the stars aren't right, okay? The next slump or the next boom or something else, that is what is going to do it, yeah? This is wishful thinking. Yeah, we can't say that history is just going to make things happen. That is part of what I'm trying to say here, is that because, you know, we tend to externalize our thoughts in our heads, yeah, We externalise our thoughts in our heads onto what we see as the world around us, and we see the world in this semi-magical way. You know, we say, oh, well, sort of like, you know, history will see us right. You know, sort of like, you know, we somehow, like, we will, you know, we'll rise to power, you know, another 350 years, and the Socialist Party will have how many seats do we need? Yeah. Whereas what I'm saying is that that has not worked, and there may be a good reason that that hasn't worked, because we're trying to play capitalism at its own game, at what it's very good at, fighting over its existing resources after it has already assimilated them to its own way of being. But what happens if capitalism fails? What happens if we catch the people who fall through capitalism's cracks? Yeah? Rather than people being radicalised in the conventional model through conventional political parties, etc., we catch people who have got ideas about the world that just do not fit with capitalism at all. And if we stop saying socialism and we start saying post-capitalism, yeah? Now, if we start saying post-capitalism, and this was really somewhere, this is off the chart stuff I haven't really worked on enough yet. But if we start saying post-capitalism, then we will start meeting a lot of people that we don't necessarily like, yeah, because they will be people who have dropped through capitalism for various different reasons. I mean, they may be tech entrepreneurs. I mean, they may be people who don't like immigrants or something like that. You know, all sorts of reasons that, like, people may have failed to integrate with capitalism. Yeah, so it's not that this is a great place that we can collect people and just, like, this is like sweet by and by. This is a post-capitalist battleground where we would have to put our stamp on to say, well, and in this world after capitalism, this is what we want the first incarnation of it to look like. Do you see what I mean? So we are basically already trying to fight over what the future is going to look like, but we can't say it's set. You know, we can't say, oh, well, history will prove us right, glorious revolution, everything's going to be socialist. It might be different, you know. It might be worse. You know, it might be worse than capitalists. You know, I mean, if the fascists took over, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, you know, you tend to think of fascism as just being, you know, sort of like one hand of capitalism. But, you know, there are potentially ways that you could organise a despotic post-capitalist society. You know, and that's the kind of thing that we would want to try and avoid. So we would basically be looking at this new world as a battleground that we are trying to win. Yeah. However, if we go to it knowing what we're doing, or at least knowing better than I do what we're doing, if we start trying to collect people to, you know, to our new set of notions that we're prepared to, you know, say, well, no, this is the kind of world that we are trying to create. It fits in with the kind of liberty in production, for example, that might appeal to a lot of people who are coming into this world. They're, you know, saying capitalism is a play, they just can't sell their product because it doesn't fit in with anything else. If you're doing, for example, if you're doing something for free online, how are you going to sell it? Yeah, you want to be seen as a vital part of the world. You know, sort of like you want to be confirmed in people's love and all that sort of thing. If you read through excerpts on James Mill, which is always my favourite go-to in Marx's works, then you will see basically the notion of sort of like how a person within a society can be seen other than in capitalism to be confirmed. You know, to be confirmed in other people's love, to be seen as a world historical character and all that. We can offer them all this, you know. We can offer them the kind of world that capitalism does not offer people. Yeah, but not in a conventional way that they would normally poo-poo or just wouldn't help them, you know. We say, okay, here's the future, and this is what we think the future should be like, and we think that you'd look good, we think that you'd like it, you know. So we're not fighting for the present, we're fighting for the future.
Right, I think I saw a hand at the back there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've probably lost the
plot,
the name game. Yeah. So I think that's why I think concepts like anti-capitalism and post-capitalism, you know, are sort of like are quite interesting. But I mean, I'd just like to sort of, you know, have a bit of a criticism of you. I mean, as a scientist,
yeah,
a bit sort of offended with this idea of us all falling foul of subjective impressions, because that's, you know, that's not what scientists do. They don't believe in their subjective impressions, and we just assume that they're a load of crap. So, I mean, it might be a problem for philosophers and social scientists, but it's not a problem for us. We don't believe anything that we see in front of our... We don't believe our sense perception is at all. We believe that what machines will tell us and stuff like that. We talked about water and ice. I mean, that, I mean, dialectics. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's a classic example of another part of dialectics of quantitative changes leading to qualitative changes. For us scientists, we would say there's nothing really going on here. The water molecule's just moving faster, and so okay, we'll water one more, the ice the next, steam the next.
Well,
a thermodynamics person would just say they're just moving at different speeds. And
well, this is
and on another question which you brought back earlier on, I think that's where it comes back to it. If you're taking a scientific analysis, you talked about immigration and stuff like that. I mean, Marx basically said that the wages are going to be driven down to the minimum subsistence level. I mean, if that's what's happening, I think we might think that we're on subsistence level, but we're not. I mean, subsistence level is what you're finding in Bangladesh, in India, in Indonesia, and we're just going down. They're going to come over here, and drive our wages down, or capital's going to move over there. But I think the Western workers are just going to get real, basically. We are, as far as capitalism's concerned, we're receiving more than subsistence wages. It might not seem like it, but that's the reality. And that's what we're faced up to.
Well, I don't have anything to say to the second point about reducing wages. That's just not really in my field. To the first one, I would say that there's different levels at which you can look at the world, and that's one of the reasons why I said, oh, please, like, for this meeting, there is no box, So scientists looking at it from a thermodynamic perspective would not be fooled by the water turning into steam problem. However, one thing that is universal and problematic is mathematics. In that, even scientists, I believe, you may tell me wrong because you know the community and I don't. But it would certainly seem to me that it's universal to consider mathematics as being sort of a world property, if you will, that you're almost like Platonic forms, that there is a mathematical form to the universe. Whereas what I would say is that the world just is, and mathematics is about brain wiring. It's about how we understand what has happened to us. Yeah, so as we try and organise the world, we organise the world in a certain way. And because we have flat minds, they're trying to deal, for example, with orbital mechanics. Orbital mechanics is quite fiendish, and solving three-body problems is, I don't know if it's possible yet, however, or at all. However, so planets don't have to do master's degrees in orbital dynamics in order to orbit their respective planetary bodies. The world just is. Yeah. So it is our problem in trying to understand the world that's the mathematical problem. Do you see what I mean? So that's somewhere that I would say that our conventional notions of science and what I'm trying to say would differ.
I'm trying to take new people first, so I saw a hand there, now I'm going to come to Kevin afterwards. So your hand was up.
Yeah, so you mentioned about class consciousness through work and something about us being misfits. I kind of thought you were makes us out to be a bit special in a way. No, it's all right. And I was thinking, well, if it's not kind of going to get to a revolution through that, then what is it? If it's not class consciousness, then what is it?
Well, first of all, I'm not necessarily saying that we're special, certainly not in a good sense. Yeah, I do think that. Surveys have been done. I mean, that's like put it in the passive sense. Surveys have been done of members in the past to find out how they've come to the party, and they have not been, a statistical slice of the working class at large. There's been, people tend to come for particular reasons, particular ways that capitalism fails us means that, if you like, we break first or something like that. Just as with any machine, some parts will break first. Now, there is a conventional notion.
Is that not free work?
Hmm?
Is that not free work?
I think it's fair to say not. For some people, it may come through the work process, but for a lot of people, it comes through the life process in capitalism. Just living in capitalism breaks you. It's a total thing. I mean, sort of, you're not just saying, I work from 9 to 5, and that's what forms my consciousness. No, you wake up in the morning and you're using QuickSave toothpaste and you're eating the cheapest cornflakes going, and you have to cram on the bus because you can't afford the tube to go to work and so on. And all this is the kind of thing that breaks you. You know, that makes.
What's different from everyone in this room to say people who aren't in this room right now? I'm just intrigued to say. I mean, obviously there isn't, you know, a million people here right now. But I'm intrigued to understand what you mean by that a bit more, kind of alluding to something that this, the particular reasons or whatever. But I
you mean the granny in the attic reason?
Lots of people understand their alienation through capitalism and stuff, but yes, they're not here right now, but it doesn't mean to say they don't understand it as such.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that people's alienation in capitalism gets expressed in certain different ways. Mm-hmm. And expressing your alienation through a formal political party that was founded in 1904 and has got like a Guedist programme, basically, dating back that Marx wrote in part for Jules Ged, and then we sort of like copied it almost word for word for our points, etc. So like this is a historical document that can't be changed and all that kind of thing. Now, okay, so like it works, but at the same time, it's sort of, you know, it's a bit of a steam engine rally. You know, in many ways, we are trying to create the best 19th century revolution ever. You know, and it's the 21st century now. Now, so if like a lot of the principles are the same, but and they are the same because capitalism is the same. You know, those basic tensions within capitalism between worker and, not just worker and capitalist, but worker and capital. Capital is more important than capitalist. You know, capitalists are how we personify capital and how we fight capital. You know, so if, like, we kill the capitalists, we kill off capitalism, hopefully. However, to actually follow the particular model that we have, for example, sitting in this hall, doing this, I mean, this is... this is something that a lot of workers would not consider something that matches their particular alienation within capitalism. You know, that they might want to, you know, if you found another way that people could channel their alienation within capitalism, you might get them to do it. But if they come, if you tell them that they're coming to something that is pretty much like a church meeting, they might say no, you know. Now, there are lots and lots of different ways that people express their alienation within capitalism, and this is just one. And all I'm saying is that we're not here because we are generic workers, because otherwise we'd be like the million flooding out the door in our boiler suits. You know, we have expressed our alienation from capitalism in a particular way, you know.
Right. I've got currently four hands in the queue, and I'm going to continue my practice of letting... new hands jump the queue, so you put your hand up.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, me, sorry. I'm quite rather confused with all this stuff on dialectics, actually, because I always thought dialectics was a fairly basic, simple thing, really. Yeah. If you go back to Engels, there were three things that defines what we mean by dialectics. One is the notion that the whole world is continuously in flux. Everything's changing, nothing's static. Okay, so by definition, it's against any form of reification. Second thing is, you cannot understand anything in isolation. You have to see it in relation to things. You can't take anything in isolation. Thirdly, the dialectic improves, you know, there's this classic thing of opposition in unity kind of idea. In other words, although you seem to suggest that, you know, the world, you know, we only know the world through our heads, as it were, in fact, what Marxism is stressing, the world exists independently of human beings, but human beings do not exist independently of the world. So there's a dialectic there, there's a kind of opposition there, but at the same time there's a unity. And there was also this idea that come from Engels that they interpenetrate. Anything that you take kind of interpenetrate. So you take sort of, you know, human society, the social life we live in, and the individual as an individual. They interpenetrate because any individual is by definition social, and any social organisation of any kind includes individuals. So you can't set up the individual against the society. So to me, I always thought dialectics was fairly, I wouldn't say simple, but basically there's some basic sort of ideas about it. But when you start talking about dialectics, I got completely lost, actually. You know, in a sense, I thought, are you saying something different, you know, a new conception of dialectics, or are you actually, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is much of what you're saying, but to say that instead of talking about, you know, an objective world and like and a person, because if you look, for example, at the dialectics of nature, yeah, and the way that Engels has written it, Engels is basically saying that the world does this. Yeah, the world beyond the senses. There's like this human look, here looking at water over there, and water is magically turning from water to steam. Okay, now. If Marx was to write that, Marx could just about write exactly the same text of Dialectic of Nature, but put the whole thing in scare quotes. Because Marx would not be saying that that's happening out there. Yeah? Marx would basically be, I believe, agreeing with me, where to say that this social relationship is something that we are sharing in our social world, yeah? But what we mean by the world is our apprehension of it. Yeah. So like you have also a world beyond the senses that we are never talking about. Okay? Then that is just stuff.
It sounds like Kant. It sounds like basically Kant's idea.
Do you mean that with a K or a C?
Yeah. You know, Kant's idea. The world exists, we can never know it.
I would put it differently. I would say that we're just never talking about it. We are always talking about our thoughts about the world. Rather, I mean, we can't stick a hand out from our head and reach onto the world outside the senses. We are always talking about our impressions of the world. Yeah.
Right. Any new hands? If not, new hand.
I think myself that there's a bit of a confusing thing created, because first and foremost, the Socialist Party agrees that capitalism only sort of collapse, as it were. There's not going to be any sort of one item of wars and things like that will give you. What if we're going to get rid of capitalism, you have to have a working class that understands that capitalism doesn't work in their interest and want to do something about it. But at the moment, there's an awful lot of folk know that capitalism isn't working in their interest, but there's certainly no want to do anything about it. And we do give them a post-capitalism point of view. If you were talking about the internet and things like that, you'd be saying, well, just people try to do things freely on the internet and they're being stopped. But quite obviously in the socialist society, that internet could be used certainly in an entirely different way, but that's what it would be. It would be there for you to enjoy. You would be saying to them, there's a production that's going on, and they're paying you off, not because you're lazy and all the rest of it, but it's because you're too productive. But in socialism, when you would stop them, you'd be when there'd be enough for everybody. The Socialist Party, that's what the Socialist Party does. It does explain what socialism means. And it's fairly simple as far as I'm concerned, the way I explained it. You were talking about interfering with the processes of capitalism, and you were saying when it comes to the internet, in some way we used to say it belongs to us, we're the ones that produced it. But why the internet? We produce everything. Well, why start with the internet and say, in some way, this is going to make them be aware of what they're doing with everything else? And how would you do it? Because we're living in a capitalist society, and they just use the rules of capitalism, private property, and all the rest of it. They say, oh, by the way, that guy sings for a living, and here, by the way, you're putting his music away for free. You're doing him out of job and all that. I know that's the drivel that the real reasons of profit they want, but nevertheless, that's what happens, and folk accept it for the same reasons.
Well, first of all, saying the Socialist Party says this, that's a faith-based statement. If you want to kick me out of the party, do it. On the matter of why we don't talk about everything rather than just the internet, what I was trying to say is that we have fought and lost those battles. I mean, for example, Marx thought, I believe I'm right here, that Marx thought that electrification in the trains was going to change everything. No? No, I'm sorry, I'm just referring to Bill as my communist Wikipedia. never mind that. But certainly, I mean, Lenin thought electrification was going to create socialism, for example, just because those were the new technology of the time. Those were the things that they could take over. Yeah, so like mining was just something that you had to deal with under the state and try and take under your control. Yeah, but the new technologies, using in your own way, in your own society, yeah, you can try and structure those from the start so that they are not things that you have to try and win back from the capitalists in the first place. So when I say something like, you're looking for the next technology, the next one would be for us, we're looking at biotechnology and nanotechnology. Those are the two next generations of technology that we're going to be looking at. Yeah, you're saying, well, so they are going to be coming along with they're not going to be in a form that capitalism can comprehend at the moment, though you can bet that they're thinking about how to do it at the moment. I mean, obviously, the main thing they're going to do is just, if everything's under patent, then you deal with the problem later as far as capitalism is concerned. You just basically say there's a patent on it, so you use it in our way. But if it's things like the mines, like the railways and things like that, these are all... these are all steady parts of capitalist society that capitalism can turn around and say, well, we've always dealt with it this way, that you go down the mine and you get a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. You do it, your father did it, your grandfather did it. This is how society is. So most people coming to that would say, okay, right, this is the way that the world is. However, I am encountering the fact that I'd like a bit more money, please. So you say a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. Yeah. If you are coming to a completely new technology, it is possible to interrupt that process of turning it into one more area of capitalism that people treat in a capitalist fashion. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I may be wrong, but I am saying that it may be possible to interrupt that process, whereby we take it from the outset, we find the people who are most involved with that, if you like, the most advanced section of the working class at that particular point in time, because they're dealing with the most sort of, they're dealing with the most creative and new portion of capitalism as it is, society as it is, and we win that over, we win that battle. Okay.
What way do we win it? Yes, it's a nationalisation argument. It's separate from every other thing that's going on round about you. And in some way, this particular unit of the production is different from the other units of production because it's new. And it's how, you'll need to explain to me anyway, how that particular group, who looks like to me a very reserved type of group, is going to get there. The other workers has looked at them as well.
What I'm saying is that old industries are continually passing away. So, for example, if we look at manufacturing in this country, I mean, a lot of manufacturing has actually been passed off to the third world, etc. But also, in a lot more, our industry has just simply changed. There's not like the same amount of heavy industry as there was done in the same way. The percentage of service sector work is now much greater, for example, and a lot of that is fed by the internet, by new computer technology, etc. Now, if you look at the balance of that, just 50 years ago, the balance was virtually zero. I mean, obviously, no internet. Computing was just so utterly basic. I think even at the time, 50 years ago, someone was saying that America would only need half a dozen computers or something. Basically, computers were only being used by people like the military for calculating ballistic ranges and atomic piles and all that kind of thing. Yeah. Now it's omnipresent. It's a significant part of our society. Now, what I'm saying is that if we had been there at the start and interrupted that process, and sort of like what that means, sort of I don't necessarily know enough to go forward about. But if we had tried to grab the new technology as it was new at the time, and as it was not in a state that that capitalism could sell it, it's like the white heat of modern technology where capitalism is trying to work out how to assimilate it with the rest of its deal, then we would have a society now where instead of like computers, instead of the internet, just being sold the same way that the same way that anything else is in society. And they basically, they've replaced, you know, sort of heavy industry in the in that portion of capitalism's portfolio, if you like. Now, if we'd managed to interrupt that, then capitalism would have a serious sort of like a serious shortfall of how do I put this? Basically, the new industries that capitalism is now relying on are radicalised industries. They are full of people that sort of like they have managed to resist being commodified. Yeah? They are full of people who are hopefully still not looking at the world in a capitalist way. They're still looking at their industry as something that can be used for the future in a liberatory manner, rather than just something that they use to make a buck, etc., etc. Okay.
Right. Hang on, because we're coming up to, we've got about 5-10 minutes left, and there's a few hands I've seen.
So oh, God, have I talked it out?
I'm going to have to break out the kryptonite and hit Simon with his bin and say short answers from now on. But this is a few people who've already had their hands up. So, Kevin, you had your hand up a very long time ago.
Excuse me, I need to come up for a minute.
If you could be very quick with this.
I will be, but right.
Yes, get up.
So very different concepts you talked about. Now, I can't respond to all of them, but sense impressions. I don't agree with you on sense impressions. First of all, you say we all agree this is a fan. It's not a fan. It's a collection of plastic parts constructed in a particular way. And it becomes a fan when energy or electricity goes into it. Then it is a thing in itself because it is a fan. You stand up a minute, please, gentlemen.
Of course.
That's not a chair. No, I'm just going to make some points about his sense impressions. That's not a chair. It's plastic and fabric. In a particular design. Certainly, Jacqueline.
Unlike me.
Sit down, please. Now it becomes a chair because Jacqueline's sitting in it. It's spent its purpose. Descartes, the standing piece of wood in a bucket, you think it's bent, it's not. Your sense impressions tell you it's bent, it's not. So I don't agree with you about sense impressions. You must mistrust sense impressions.
I agree with you to Descartes. I'm not quite sure what the point was about Descartes.
Well, I think we've got to rattle through a few people, so that one could be one for discussion later. Right. Did you know, very quickly, please.
Yes. Well, as Simon was talking, and part of his talk was about socialists intervening at a very early stage of the introduction of new technology. But the problem is that as socialists, we are an extremely small group, aren't we? So how likely is it that socialists will effectively intervene in the introduction of new technology unless we are a larger organisation at some time in the future?
That's why I use the notion post-capitalist, and I hope that for once we can actually use our notion of, if you like, the revolution selling itself. Because we haven't managed to use that, obviously, in the past. Otherwise, there would be millions of people crowding out this door. Yeah? However, if you take those people who are creating a post, what would be a post-capitalist future, if left to its own devices, without settling into capitalism, if you can provide a poll for that to actually happen, to actually stay revolutionised as an industry, rather than just fall back into the capitalist orbit, yeah, that is something that sells itself, because the people themselves will are usually looking around saying, "What do I, you know, what do I do with this? Do I really have to work for the man?" You say, "No, you don't."
Right. Okay. Yes.
I'm just interested in this idea of intervening and exactly what you mean by it. Because it strikes me that you can mean a few different things. I'm not sure which ones. Do you mean intervene in the sense that as socialists we kind of intervene in a kind of ideological sense and we sort of propagate material, we see the internet's coming, it's about to be commodified before it becomes commodified by capitalism. We intervene and say, no, look, this can be part of the kind of socialist future. Or do you mean a kind of almost like anarcho-syndicalist idea or a kind of workers' co-op idea? The workers actually kind of take over, you know, this emerging industry that's happening. Workers take over and say, no, it's not going to be commodified. And if you mean that, then how exactly does that work, given that we kind of live in a capitalist world and everyone has to have money to survive and all those sort of things? How do you actually, you know, make kind of pocket of resistance to capitalism in that kind of way?
That's a $64 question, well, $64 billion question, but it's always been the same for every other resistance movement.
Yeah. Every other resistance movement, you say, how is this going to be done? Yeah. How do you put this on the table? The notion is, in whatever way you wish to define the notion of space, that you create a space whereby instead of having to fall back to capitalism, in whole or in part, you create a space whereby these things can be used in a post-capitalist manner. Say, if you start trying to sell this as socialism, if you try and start dragging it back to particular old ideologies that really will not necessarily work here, yeah, then you will fail. Yeah? What you want to do is you want to turn to people and say, keep doing what you're doing, yeah, and basically if you've got, for example, nanotechnology, if it allows you to create a pattern and then just roll off 10,000 of those patterns, and someone says, well, I would like to create 10,000 of these because I know 10,000 people who want them, and it would cost nothing. Capitalism says, no, you've got to sell this by the hour. We need to find some way that they can, as you say, make their way through capitalism, at the same time produce those 10,000. Producing those 10,000 for nothing sells our post-capitalist revolution. Yeah, how you do that, hell if I know.
Right, I think I've got to make that the last intervention, appropriate enough. And if I could ask Simon to sum up what he said tonight in 1 minute.
I think, as Churchill said, if I had more time, I'd write a short speech. I don't know how to sum up after that. I wasn't looking for a sum up. All I'm trying to say is that we have a conventional notion of what socialism is and what capitalism is, based upon not necessarily Marxian notions carried from like the late 19th and 20th centuries. Okay, particularly the party could be seen in an Anglo-Marxist sort of like milieu, if you will, which is very much it stands to reason, I work down pit and I want more money for what I do, sort of thing, rather than actually looking at it in a more sort of like continental sort of theoretical way. I am saying that if you try and look at this in a theoretical way, there are other options, including particularly the option of looking at what post-capitalism is, and that and I think this is the key, that capitalism cannot just be destroyed in the field by a glorious socialist revolution. Capitalism also always fails. Yeah, it fails every time there is new technology, and because no one is there to pick up the tab, yeah, all this technology basically just falls back into capitalism's grip without it having to do anything. It recuperates it. If you can intervene there, if you can create a post-capitalist movement, yeah, then that will do what we want it to do, even if it doesn't necessarily look like the thing we want it to look like.
Right, well, that was a minute and a half. I think you did very well. So...